Good evening, this is Radio Edutalk. My name is John Johnson. I'm sitting in Glasgow, Scotland. I'm joined, as usual tonight, by David Noble, who is over on the east coast of Scotland in Hillside School at the moment.
And yep, absolutely. And it's great to be here. Good to hear from you, John, and great to have Derek on the show.
Yep, our guest tonight is somebody who probably doesn't need any introduction to anybody who's been interested in education and educational technology in Scotland for the last millennium or so. It's Derek Robertson. Good evening, Derek.
Good evening, John. Good evening, David. Greetings from Scotland's sunny city, Dundee.
It's not got much competition from Glasgow at the moment at all. So we'll just kick off by asking Derek to give us in a minute to give us some background on where he's been. I can't remember how many years ago it was that I first bumped into you, Derek. But just before that, can I remind people, if you've got a question for Derek, you can pass it on by Twitter. You could just use the hashtag Edutalk, or you could tweet at Derek, I guess, or myself, John Johnson, or at Edutalker, Edutalkr. So if you've got any questions, we'll try and pick them up on Twitter. And I think as well, you could probably... Am I right, David? Have you got an email there?
Hello, just looking for the email address, John.
Yeah, I was just making sure you're in a position to check it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you can...
Yeah, I can do the back channel tonight.
You can check it. You can email edutalk, edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk. Am I right, David?
Yep, that's right, John.
Right. Email addresses, remember, is not my strong suite. So, Derek, could you maybe just tell us where you've come from, where you've got to, and a bit about how you the in-between stuff?
Okay, I was a teacher in Dundee for a number of years. We enjoyed teaching, and I got interested in digital tech. And I became a staff tutor in Dundee for a couple of years, 1999 to 2001. And then I managed to get a position at Dundee University to go in there and help redevelop their ICT and digital learning, basically, modules within their undergraduate and postgraduate programme. So I did that, and I built in this developing idea of an interest that I had was the use of computer games as learning tools into that programme back in 2001 to 2006, in the core programme and into the elective. As a result of that, a position came up at national level at Learning and Teaching Scotland, which I was successful in applying for as a National Development Officer for game-based learning. And I did a number of things there, and I really think that the work that I kind of led on and partnered fantastic people across Scotland who allowed me into their authorities and their classrooms to work with the fantastic people who we've got in the education landscape in Scotland to really put out a number of approaches and ideas and what can be referred to maybe as signature pedagogies. And as a result, I think that we helped change the discourse around the use of computer games as learning tools. A number of reasons, which you may touch on, I felt I had to leave Education Scotland in August. It was very disappointing. However, I was lucky enough to get a position back at the University of Dundee as a lecturer on the undergrad and postgraduate programmes, and I'm looking to contribute to that and to hopefully further my research interests.
And your research interests in games-based learning still, Derek, or are you...
Well, listen, I look at other things. I'm actually looking at Twitter at the moment. I'm doing a lot of reading on Twitter, and I'm really interested in the way in which I'm seeing schools use it to communicate the life of learning in their schools to mums and dads, to the wider community of learning. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever seen anything that has impacted on the way in which schools are sharing and creating this learning community. There's, for instance, I look at Hayeshead Nursery in Arbroath, and if I was the parent of a kid there, I would be delighted, because I just... the vibrancy in the life that's conveyed to me through that channel is phenomenal. And I look at Longhall Primary School in Dundee, and believe it or not, I was doing a bit today about critical evaluation of web sources with my students, and I talked to the students about the fact that the other day at Longhall they were looking at inspiring people and we're looking at Martin Luther King, and we're looking at ways in which he's been misportrayed or misrepresented and portrayed incorrectly by far-right groups on the web. So we'll look at that with my students today, and I look at Grangemouth High School, and every one of the departments in Grangemouth High School appears to have a Twitter account, and it's active, and it's got a lot of followers. And the high school, the Grangemouth High School Art Department, is sharing work which I think just kind of allows learners' work to be shared with a global audience, and people are commenting back. And I've seen it with Port Ellen Primary School. You know, there's, I think, there's still dissension within my colleagues, or not dissension. Goodness, who do you think I am? There's still a disagreement or this view that Twitter's for showing what you've heard for your breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to show people, look at the way in which it's been used in a thoughtful, educational way to create that kind of learning culture. Parents as partners, all that agenda. I just think it's hugely powerful, and I'm looking at that at the moment, as well as I've got a thing about Minecraft with my students that I'm working on at the moment. And I'm interested in seeing how helping my students understand the spaces that young people inhabit and situate themselves in willingly, and all the things they use in order to upskill themselves without the intervention of the qualified adult, i.e. the teacher. And I think it's really important that we understand how able our learners are, and that we stop having this infantilized view of them and what they can and can't do, and to put glass ceilings on them. So I've got these things up my arm, up my sleeve at the moment that I'm kind of interested in. I talked for ages there. Sorry, James.
No, that's the idea is, Derek, you talk for ages, and that's fascinating. And there's lots of things we're going to hopefully dig into in that. I really want to come back to Minecraft for various reasons later on. One of the things just to prepare for tonight is a quick scan over your blog, and in particular the post where you announced that the Consilium was closing down, and that post, and hopefully I'll pop this in the show notes if it's okay with you, just sort of gave you an idea of the range of stuff that you covered and achieved with the Consilium project. So I think it's maybe worth just giving a wee description of that, and maybe lessons learned from the experience, educational lessons learned, the sorts of things that would affect how you would design, say, learning or promoting learning in the future.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, the Consilium was magnificent. It really was. The idea was this. As a classroom teacher, I had witnessed boys in my class play a Super Nintendo game, and it was in the last day of term. What kind of drove it was this. I read James Paul G's text, What Video Games Can Teach Us About Learning Literacy, and in that text, he articulated in a theoretical perspective what I thought was happening in classrooms. We were taking commercially available games, the kind that you would buy for Nintendo, PlayStation, Xbox, and I was putting them into schools. And I, alongside the teachers, were finding real buy-in into these learning situations by the children, irrespective of their dispositions towards learning and attitudes to learning and their abilities towards learning. And we were getting responses from teachers, from kids of all ages, about how this was having a dramatic impact on their engagement in learning and attitude to self as a learner and attitude to the collegiality in the group. And what we think was happening, James Paul G talks about semiotic domains, and what it basically means is if you take the domain of the school and in that domain the teacher and the learner, the teacher is kind of the dominant one with status, experience, mastery, all these things, and the learner is almost like a visitor into that domain, doesn't have these attributes that the teacher's got. But if you take the domain of the games world, for instance, like Mario Kart, and you situate learning in the context, learning within that context, so literacy, science, maths, we think what was happening was the two domains were able to intersect, and learners were actively engaging with learning in school because they were in a domain that had relevance, purpose, and appeal, and cultural relevance for them. We think that was at the heart of how we had so much success with this approach. Rather than engage in an edutainment-type game built by teachers for kids, either with kids, we thought kids were tolerating these things because it was the kind of habitus of school, the established norms of what happens. But they would go home and situate themselves in the real stuff, where there was real challenge and demand. Just look at Minecraft and what's happening with that. and you look at the learning that's happening in there, and it blows out of the water the Microsoft Office culture that's predominant in our primary schools. And that is really what was at the heart of what we were saying. And I think it chimed with lots of people who were open-minded, willing to recognise the fact that school needs to change, the attitudes need to change. Unfortunately, that didn't really break through in the iceberg habitus of Education Scotland, and we ended up getting closed. But we had things happening in Australia, the Middle East, Scandinavia, England, all over the shop. Really, when I say copied, I didn't mean that in a bad way. I mean, they looked to replicate and were inspired by the things that we did. And so it was really, really disappointing when what happened did. But I think we made a bit of a mark in terms of helping people maybe reimagine or rethink what we mean by educational technologies.
Certainly, I think so, Derek. And I'm just interested in the copying thing, because sort of copying culture, and you've talked about creativity, and a lot of creativity seems to come from copying. So I don't think it's a bad thing that you're copied, because I think every time somebody copied you.
What I mean, John, was that it was a Scottish success story. Mm,
yeah.
That even, I mean, I put Guitar Hero at school, right, years ago, and it was a great success in the class. And then my colleague Ollie Bray came to me and says, "Look, Derek, we're putting in for this. We're thinking about putting this into a transition idea. What do you think?" And so, great idea. Let's grow this practice. So I gave, I think, half the sets they required to help support East Lothian's Guitar Hero project. So they wrote this up and put it in for a Microsoft competition, which I'm sure you know, and Ollie won, they won first prize. Well, East Lothian won first prize, and they took it to the world where they came second. But I took that to Australia when I was representing Learning and Teaching Scotland at the conference in Victoria in Melbourne. And then they had a national Victoria Schools Guitar Hero competition. You know, we've had other applications being used in Hong Kong, and I think it was amazing that people were looking to us and saying, what they're doing next, and it was a great thing to be part of, and a great thing to be working with teachers across Scotland. So the copying thing, you know, I would put ideas into schools, and the teachers invariably took on board my idea, but twisted it, mm-hmm. and made it their own. And that was the whole point about this idea of sharing and people adjusting it and adapting it to meet their own kind of local context and their own needs and their own idiosyncrasies. And we came across so many teachers who were just tremendous and who ran with these ideas and had the children eating out the palm of their hands and their mums and dads enthusing about the impact of some of their children.
Derek, it's David Noble here. Just a quick question at this point. Well, two, in fact. Can you say... Typical me. Can you say what was your proudest project that you worked on in recent years, and you maybe also say something about which approaches or which games or tools do you regret that didn't take off either globally or locally or relating to the work that you were involved in? So should have taken off, should have really become a hit across the school system, but didn't.
Well, there were so many. The Dr. Kawashima thing was really good because it was my first peer-reviewed published academic paper. And so from a personal viewpoint, that was good, but it also put us on the map. And I used the Dr. Kawashima thing strategically because back in 2006, the computer game in education, really, it was still a folk devil and was creating moral panics. What's this nonsense? Computer games. And I ended up representing Learn and Teach in Scotland on the breakfast TV couch with Susanna Reid, of all people. It was very, very great experience.
Remember it well, Derek, yeah.
Yeah, I remember it. And even back then, there's been a number of attempts to derail what we were trying to do because the BBC had me as a guest on there, and yet on that morning, the both times I was on, they briefed somebody to come in to talk against what I was doing. But I wasn't told they were coming on the couch with me. You know, so there was little moments like that made you think, oh, what's going on here? But I think the Dr. Kawashima thing was great because it really put us on the map. And as a result, I got lots and lots and lots of requests from local authority partners to come to the Consularium and meet me and to go and see, right, what is this about? Aberdeenshire were the main partner. They were fantastic. And it was driven by Anna Rossville, who came up with the idea for Nintendogs. And I don't think I've seen, maybe along with Land of Me and some Mario Kart stuff, but I don't think I've seen a better digital technologies and learning activity or methodology than what we did with Nintendogs. It was phenomenal, and we've got a published research paper about that as well. I commissioned a paper at Education Scotland that Dun University wrote that never saw the light of day. It was just at the time Education Scotland was being formed, but that was a disappointment. That wasn't published, but you can read about it if you get the Signature Pedagogies paper that we did, published in Computers in Schools Journal. So that was great, and I have to say Guitar Hero was amazing. To get that in schools and to get that, I mean, who would imagine that you could have put Guitar Hero into schools? But my thinking was, if you create contexts for learning that have cultural appeal, you're seeing 12, 13, 14-year-old kids at the time wearing Ramones t-shirts, Thin Lizzy t-shirts, and it was like music their mums and dads would be like, that I liked, you know? Even had a heart on it. It was fantastic. It was great. And so we were getting to play things like Guitar Hero and situating that in learning context that children were getting. It was sounds really 1980s, but it was cool. You know, it just switched on to them, and the fact that they suspended their disbelief and went with it. If you can get the context right, you can get learners to suspend their disbelief, and you can use your art your artistry as a teacher to be able to create those contexts. The one that's a disappointment was Canvas. We invested a bit of money in creating the first open SIM learning environment available nationally to an education system, and Canvas was a system kind of like built on the same engine that built Second Life, and we created a gallery for each of the 32 local authorities that they could exhibit their children's work, and beside their children's work there was a little bit for a video commentary by the learner, so they would curate their work, and then a link to a discussion forum, and it was all with Glow Login, etc. But there were so many issues with ports needing opened at the time, the real issue about people us not trusting learners to speak to each other in digital environments without the presence of a teacher. You were able to unfortunately pimp the avatar, so we managed to switch that off. There were so many things that happened, but the learning potential that was in Canvas, it could have been wonderful. And it was really disappointing to see how that was sunk, basically, by a number of factors. So that's the one that disappointed me the most.
Derek, I know that obviously there's an academic paper that based on the Nintendo's work, but can you just kind of boil it down a wee bit and just say what was so good about it and the approaches that teachers were taking?
Well, what seemed to happen, I talked about the semiotics, right, and the meaning, and what James Paul G talks about situated learning. And I think that's really important, and about the need for cultural relevance for young people. Curriculum for Excellence talks about purpose, challenge, and appeal. And I think that they're right, but we really need to walk the walk rather than just talk the talk. And we need to situate ourselves in spaces where young people choose to be. Spaces where they spend their time and it resonates with them culturally, and that's really what was driving this. However, the Signature Pedagogies thing focused on the art of the teacher. And although we worked with people like... I forget her name, that's terrible. The first lady who did this up in Elric Primary School, her approach was one that seemed to be modelled on almost like a commonly held view about what is effective practice in the early years by skilled practitioners. And our argument was that wherever we put this, there seemed to be the hub of an understanding about effective practice with such tools, and effective practice about how you would create effective learning context for children. And it seemed to be something that naturally grew in early years with early years practitioners' use of it. And we linked that to what Shulman called signature pedagogies. We tried to establish that teachers had this almost like innate understanding of how to create effective learning context using tools such as this. And that was what was at the heart of the paper that we published.
Derek, I'm kind of just... I was thinking of something else, but just this bit at the end, that the idea that teachers have this innate ability, I'm going to try and link it to I think you were tweeting earlier today, or well, actually it might not be earlier today, but when you were looking at the experiences and outcomes of
did you see that?
Yeah, of the CFE, and yeah. You know, trying to chew them a wee bit, and I wonder if this idea that teachers know what they're doing, they know how to create good learning experiences when they've got a context to do it in, kind of parallels the idea that
But John, my point about the signature pedagogies was that one of the reasons that we had huge success with games-based learning, although I don't like to call it that anymore, I think the name's a problem, was that there was a low technology skills threshold. Mm-hmm. All they had was the stylus and the two-screen Nintendo DS. They had children who knew these games inside out. Mm-hmm. The technology did not become a barrier to effective learning.
Yep.
On the contrary, the teachers that we work with, and I'm talking of teachers of both sexes and all ages, I can think of one professional input I had, and it was in Edinburgh, where I had a teacher that sat with her arms folded for the whole session and refused to engage in anything. Right? Teachers were willing to try it, and they got success, and they could do it. And as a result, it allowed them to plan for learning, take learning places, and allow the children to lead learning. Mm. And so the technology became almost invisible, and it didn't become a barrier. And that, unlike many of the other things that we've been trying to drive, over the years, that was, for me, one of the main reasons, again, why what we did was so successful.
Certainly. I was kind of moving just a wee bit to the left field of that.
See the ICT to enhance learning stuff?
Yeah.
I tweeted that because I was looking at what we were saying, and I was struggling to make sense of it.
So this is where I'm going with this, in a rather roundabout way. We were talking to David Cameron a few weeks ago, not the English Prime Minister, obviously, but...
I know David very well.
And
he's a great taste in music, by the way.
One of the things that really caught me about what he said was that when teachers were assessing learning, they needed to be able to internalise what they were assessing. They need to be able to internalise. And I think, and I may be slightly mishearing what he said, but I think he meant that the whole layout of all the different experiences and outcomes was too much to hold in your head at once.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that teachers could, say, assess a piece of work was because they knew what a good piece of work would look like. They'd already looked at a good piece of work. And it almost is not intuitive, but because they can internalise that and they can hold that. And I think that maybe links to this idea that teachers, if you give them a space where the children are confident and happy and that there's not a great technological barrier, that they know how to make that into a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think there's maybe a sort of link in to sort of professionalism and the idea that we don't have to have things as finely sliced either in our planning or in our assessment as maybe some people go for?
I'm not sure, John. This is something, again, when I worked at Education Scotland that I used to talk about all the time, and what I think is the biggest barrier we've faced is the culture, behaviour and attitudes towards teaching and learning with digital tools.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from the late 90s, from North Training onwards, I think what's happened, we have inadvertently created, that is my take, we have inadvertently created a dependency culture in relation to teaching and learning with digital tools. People need to be trained before they can get a password.
Mm-hmm.
People need to be trained before they can use the software. People need to be trained and have their hand held. And I think it has de-skilled and de-professionalised our teaching profession in relation to digital tools and learning. And as a result, it's 2014, and we still have the issues that we have. I think things are getting better. I think we're getting more and more teachers coming in who, it'd be great to do some research on this, but I think that with the games-based learning thing, something was different about that at the time. Something different about the way in which the tools were used and presented to teachers. It wasn't about the tech. It was about the learning and teaching. It was about the learning. And I think we have too often focused on the tech. And I see it happening now with Glow again, where we talk about the platform and we talk about all manner of things about being better, but we are not focusing on, fundamentally, it should be about how do we use this to impact on and affect good learning and teaching.
Yeah, I don't think you get an awful lot of argument there from anybody, except when they started getting down to the nitty-gritty of implementing things, and then they begin to say, oh, there's barriers here, and we need to do this, and we need to do that.
I did North Training as well, and I remember seeing how difficult it was.
Yeah.
Mind you, for every member of a teaching staff to turn up on a Tuesday to be shown how to use a spreadsheet, and then to be sent back to school with the hope that they would use a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
You know, back in 2000, 2001, you know, we needed to have strategies in place that enabled us to realise our vision. And I think that there were strategies in place, but we need, with for GLOW, for instance, and we had some people who used it tremendously well and who led it, but brilliantly well, but who were faced with what I think was that almost entrenched deficit views to teaching and learning that have maybe held us back. And I think a lot of this is culturally transmitted to new teachers as well. We need to be looking at this. This, for me, should be at the top of our agenda for any strategy that we have moving forward in relation to how digital technologies and learning are being used to support curriculum for excellence and help our learners achieve their best.
Derek, see with that in mind, can you say about how maybe things are different in your undergraduate programme, or how things have changed maybe in light of, you know, the great influence I'm sure that you'll have on the curriculum in that programme, but also in light of the likes of the Donaldson report? I mean, we go to occasional kind of student teach meets and things like that, but I mean, for me, it's now it's 18 years since I did my postgrad. So, you know, what does your programme look like, and how do you try to influence or to build in the best elements of best practice for digital technologies?
John, I'm sure you'd appreciate that when you start into a new job, it's certainly not my programme, it's everybody's, and it's an established programme with an established team with relationships with students, etc. So for me to come in and be, you know, like make changes, etc., I just wasn't going to do that, and I'm not going to do that. But I think what we're trying to do, through circumstances with a colleague being off work for a while, I've had to take on board a lot of the ICT inputs. And the MA 2 and the year 2 inputs are new because we have a new MA degree. So that was based in a teaching maths and science module. So I was looking at ways in which digital technologies can impact on maths and science. So I unapologetically embedded a bit of game design in that module for core. And I did it in such a way that I helped teach Scratch to the students, mm-hmm. but in such a way that we were addressing maths concepts, and to help convey what I've seen in schools across Scotland with Scratch and teachers using that, and how you are addressing a range of math contexts in the creation of one game, for instance, or one digital asset that allows you to touch on 4, 5, or 6 mathematics concepts you might not meet in your textbook over the course of a term. So, and I was really hammering home this agenda about maker culture and about an ethos of creation with digital tools and not consumption. I've been saying that phrase for goodness knows how long. And that kind of helped inform the work we did with game design with Charlie Love, Brian Clark, etc. on the team. So I'm kind of doing that, but also working with my colleagues and having debates even today about Twitter and about social media and about people being on their phones in classes. And some of my colleagues feel that they should be listening to the tutor. But I'm arguing that paradigm is one we need to challenge now. And we're looking for a participative paradigm where students are listening to you, but also looking at material that you've got online or finding stuff and tweeting it so everybody can see it. So there's a lot of, again, cultures, behaviours and attitudes that I think that can only be developed through discussion and argument and making a case for things, which I think will slowly maybe make change to ensure that effective use of digital tools in the wider sense can be brought into helping create a healthy learning culture.
Derek, you touched on creativity there, and I just wondered if there's a tension between, and this is somebody looking at on games from the outside, a game like Minecraft, for instance, to me seems like a place that is obviously creative in all sorts of ways, but some of the other games culture, and I don't necessarily mean the kind of games that you've used in school, doesn't seem immediately creative. Am I sort of wrong in that, or is that a...
So Minecraft, you don't think Minecraft seems immediately creative?
No, I think Minecraft obviously does seem immediately creative, but mm-hmm. a lot of other games that children play, say Call of Duty something or other, the number or whatever, doesn't seem particularly creative to me, and I wonder mm-hmm. And I'm not saying Call of Duty is necessarily one you're going to bring into the classroom, although maybe you can, I don't know. But
look at Dr. Kawashima's brain training. I wouldn't for 1 minute say that was a creative game.
Right, that's...
But it was beautifully designed, mm-hmm. and what it did have was it had that game mechanic that makes you come back to it. It has that game mechanic that's all about self-improvement. Now, I gave a talk at the e-assessment conference in Dundee University, I think 2011, the opening keynote, I think 2011. And I was conveying what my thinking is about this, that in just about all these games, there's an underlying aspect of these games that allows the learner to identify their progress, identify their development needs, and make provision to address that and improve it. A culture of self-improvement is inherent in the computer games that young people play. Now, that for me is absolute educational gold, to have young people addressing their needs and metacognitively addressing their needs and taking the action to improve those. Now, it's almost the holy grail that we're looking for, but young people seem to innately do that. So where you maybe don't see creativity, there's almost still this kind of brilliant design that allows that learning to happen and to hook learners and to bring them in. Now, no doubt there are a lot of other games, etc., that aren't particularly creative, that people might be switched off by. But if you just look at it, and Guitar Hero, for instance, come back to that one, there's so many things we use. The vast majority of people would never, ever, ever have thought of putting that into a school. But it takes, maybe just some people have got that quirky left-field idea about, oh, I can use that, I can use this. Mm-hmm. And it's not always the learning that happens in the game, although with Nintendogs, the learning in the game was amazing. But it's the learning that happens out with the game, that you've allowed the game to create the culture that's brought the kids in and to allow themselves to situate themselves in what the teacher has planned for them.
Derek, I'm just wondering, can you take this to its kind of maybe a logical conclusion and say that is it maybe about the kind of mechanics of the game or the philosophy or the I don't know, you can even bring sort of developmental theory or child development theory into it. You know, could you say that it's more about the approach to your resources, what you have in front of you, what you have in your classroom, and about how you can kind of engender a games mechanic or some kind of culture of self-improvement? Does it actually need the technology for a hook or for other reasons, or can it be done for low tech or no tech?
I think there's something specific about the culture of domains. If we can hook it into, I think the stuff's all wrapped up and where children situate themselves and where education can exploit that and situate itself to help address curriculum development. I went to see Lego the Movie the other day. I didn't want to go, but my youngest daughter wanted to see it, and I said, right, I'll take you. So I went along with her with the 3D specs on, sitting watching the Lego Movie, and within 20 minutes, I was totally and utterly transfixed by this wonderful piece of art. You must go and see the Lego Movie because it's a manifesto for creative learning. At the end of it, I don't want to be a spoiler for folks that are going to see it, right? But I'll kind of tell you that the Lego Movie is all based on the imaginative play with Lego that the boy's actually carrying out. And there's the barrier that's called Professor Business. And Professor Business wants everybody to stick to the plan, everybody to stick to the instructions. And so all the characters in this little boy's imagination are subverting this, and they're fighting against Professor Business. So it turns out Professor Business is his dad. And his dad doesn't let him in the basement to play with the Lego because it's his and he doesn't want it spoiled. And I found it almost like a metaphor for my experience with games and game design and trying to change what I've called the habitat, the glacial habitus of established education. And I feel I've met quite a few professor businesses, press businesses in my career in the past 2 years since Education Scotland was formed. But anyway, I'll say no more on that. So, but I really think that's the case. That it's about how we need to change how we frame education. We can't allow ourselves to continue to have our stiff, disappointing approach to teaching and learning. Switch off those phones. You listen to me. This kid, I think we must look at ways in which we can really engage because our learners are wonderfully creative. And I think that the culture that we engender or that we create in our schools and allow to thrive is one that we need to address and one we need to have more on learners' terms.
Just to go off a slightly on the Lego. I don't know, did you see the various bits about the difference between Lego in the 80s and Lego now, as opposed as a father of girls, Derek? I wondered if you had noticed that.
My daughter has made the most amazing Volkswagen camper van, right. and it looks great, and the learning that happened was also looking at the instructions and doing all the intricate parts. Yeah. But I had two Quality Street tins full of Lego, me and my brother. Mm-hmm. And we used to make the most ridiculous things that came from our imaginations, and I think there's merit in both. And so this is that what you're kind of getting at, that kind
that
of
one, and also the fact that they seem to now be designing girl Lego in pink.
Yeah, and again,
which is
it's quite amazing. It must be my influence. My daughters will say that that's sexist.
Yeah,
and they're asking. my youngest daughter certainly does not want pink Lego. I can imagine the look on her face if I gave her a box of pink Lego. Yeah. I think I'd be wearing it, to tell you the truth.
Well, there was this wonderful. It was on Twitter and various places. Picture from which was an 80s advert for Lego, and there was a wee girl who was wearing a stripy jumper of assorted colours, as people did in the 80s, and a pair of jeans, and had this fantastic Lego thing. Somebody was just contrasting that with the modern one, which is
I saw that stuff. You could see her holding a Karabakh bar, some, couldn't you, because it was over the same vintage.
I just thought that reminded me of a few things I've heard you either writing about or talking about with your approach to your daughters, and I thought it might strike a chord that we need a retro Lego freedom party or something to get the old tins out.
You'd have been like me. You had your cardboard box full of toys that sat in your cupboard, and your tin of Lego. That was the size of it, you know. But we were happy.
With that cardboard box.
Talking about cupboards now, I'm saying that this is no more than an anecdote, but several people I've spoken to have said that there are cupboards full of tech in their school, and it's kind of out of date tech. It's sort of stuff that's never been used, since maybe the year it was purchased. So putting that kind of negative to one side, what would be your kind of top tips then for a sustainable approach to using technologies in the classroom?
Oh, goodness. I thought this was going to be an easy chat, David. Goodness gracious. let me just think. I'm not too sure. Back when we started the Consilarium, one of my aspirations was to help head teachers and people who made financial decisions make them with a more kind of informed frame of mind. Mm-hmm. Now, I think interactive whiteboards have fantastic potential, and I think if you're a great practitioner with them, they can be a tremendous tool in the class. But we spent millions on those. Millions, without any real research evidence to show that they could have a real return on our investment. And what we were doing back then was, let's say $3,000 for a class set of Nintendo DS with the games, or maybe £3,000 for a cracker interactive whiteboard at the same time. And I was saying, well, what do you want to invest your money in? You know, and so when it comes to the tech that you buy, maybe the reason that you've got a cupboard full of tech is because we bought the wrong tech. And we haven't, even when I was doing the stuff for Scottish Government, looking at the digital tablets in schools, I was getting stories of schools phoning some local authority ICT teams and saying, I've just bought 30 iPads, what do you do with them? You know, so I think we've got this culture, and it's been allowed to develop, that we'll buy the new shiny thing, and we'll buy what's new, and yet we don't have a real strategy for its effective use, and for its effective use to impact on learning and teaching. So I think in a roundabout way I've answered your question. It's maybe, I think you need to have a strategy, and you need to think carefully about why you're buying digital tech, how you plan to use it, and how you think it's going to transform the learning and teaching experiences that young people are going to engage with.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting you're talking about your involvement in the university now as a lecturer, and you would be looking for kind of deep learning and deep reflection among your student teachers, you know, to enable them to make the right decisions maybe the first time around. But I liked your idea of the kind of lending library. I think that was a few years ago now. I remember you talked to several teach meets about it.
Well, David, that is another one. When the Consularium was closed, I desperately attempted to try and keep its head above water. And I worked with the fantastic Con Morris. And Con helped set up a professional learning community for me in GLOW. And I made this cupboard of equipment that I had gathered over the years. I mean, I'm talking a class set of Macs for animation. I had 10 sets of Nintendo DS, 30 PlayStation 3s, 30 Xboxes, 30 Wiis. Just a tremendous amount of equipment for Lego Wii Do kits. I had a tremendous amount of equipment. So what I did was I built that into an inventory in GLOW. And I made that available for loan to Scottish teachers, provided they bid for it with a forum that told me what they wanted it for, how they planned to use it, what they thought the impact on learning would be, and what they thought the impact on their professional development might be. And what then happened was, if their bid was accepted, I created a wiki page in GLOW for them to share with us their experience. I couriered the equipment out to the teachers and couriered it back. And unfortunately, it's kind of disappointingly, I would say about 80% of those wiki pages remained empty, and we never got any feedback from the teachers. And I think I must have made about nigh on 250 to 300 loans. So it was a real good attempt to try, and that's still there, by the way, but I don't think the inventory has been maintained. I don't think people get this. That might, something you might want to look at, John. I was telling my students. No. Sorry, giving you extra work.
Wrong coast.
but this went. We couriered this to Orkney and Shetland, to Dumfries and Galloway, to Islay. This was a national resource. It doesn't matter where the office was. Education Scotland couriered this out, and I was actually telling my students about this the other day, and I've told them to write to Education Scotland to see if they can see what's available. Because that equipment's sitting in there, maybe gathering dust. And David, you're right. A lending library, the call centre do this as well. The call centre lend material and resources to schools to try and to test it out, to see if they want to buy it themselves. And it's something we should have done. I think we've really missed the trick on what the Consularium was and could have continued to be in terms of being like a hub for the exploration of digital technologies and learning.
I actually had almost exactly the same experience in North Lanarkshire, Derek, where for a few years we had a lending library of things like Nintendo's, iPod Touches and the like, which let out, and it was the feedback, getting people to publish feedback was always a tricky one. I think it's just because lots of things happen. And the best will in the world, you know, sometimes people start something and the stuff comes out to them, and it either, you know, then they go off sick or somebody gets promoted or things change. So I think we've almost got to accept that we're going to get a fairly low return on that. And the other thing...
I disagree.
I'm just going from my experience, which...
I think it's indicative. I talked earlier about the kind of the dependency culture, etc. I think it's indicative of the attitudes towards digital teaching and learning, and maybe I'm being harsh, and I don't think, I actually think with GLOW that the people who envisage GLOW, you guys still there?
Absolutely.
I think the people who envisage GLOW, and I look at them and I can see their faces, and I think what they did was visionary, but I think we made a big assumption. I think we made an assumption that teachers wanted to share and would share. And I think that, again, culturally is something that we haven't quite got nailed yet. And for various reasons, maybe many of our colleagues in the teaching profession just aren't quite ready to share what they've done. They maybe don't think their stuff's good enough. They're maybe frightened to put their head above the parapet. There's maybe a lot of the stuff going on that we haven't really got to grips with or addressed. So I think maybe that's partly to do with it as well, but also partly to do with the fact that it's IT and you don't really need to bother.
Yeah, well, we officially do now, I think. I think it's in our contract somewhere.
It always was, John.
Aye.
Listen, one of the presentations I gave, I talked about how I met so many teachers that have said to me, I don't do IT. No, it's the Macron teacher does that, or GLOW, I logged into that once. And I met an inspector colleague one day who were having a debate about digital technology and learning, and he didn't do it because, it's not my preferred learning style. So that was a cracker. But I think there's so many things that the attitudes towards digital technologies. We've allowed it just to be neglected and to ignore it. We really didn't need to bother.
And now we need to hopefully reboot it or reinvent it, or maybe the barriers are coming down. And I know you did a good deal of work on the sort of various one-to-one tablet pilots and things, and certainly in a few schools that I've observed where the teachers did the same sort of thing, not exactly the same sort of thing as you were talking about with Nintendo's, but they gave over the control of the devices to the pupils and allowed pupils to respond to learning opportunities, I suppose, in different ways, in the ways that they preferred. I saw a big difference in the attitude to technology there, both in the teachers and the pupils. And maybe it's just that we're just going to get, you're saying that, you know, the idea of Twitter being useful. Now, Twitter's useful because it's easy. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, and the easier, maybe we've got it now with, especially the tablets where you only need your fingers and there is very few choices. Mm-hmm. You can poke, you can swipe, you can poke a bit harder. That's all you really need to do to a tablet to get it to do something. So maybe, and the same maybe you were saying about the Nintendo's, that, you know, you've got two screens and you've got a wee pen.
Yeah.
Maybe we're getting to the point now where the tech is just, you don't even think about it really.
That will tip
the balance. I certainly have thought a few times when I've been in classes with children who are using iPads that basically there goes my job as a staff developer for ICT, because the kids were picking up how to use the technology without thinking, and they could concentrate on what they were learning, and no, it didn't matter what it was. So I think maybe there's an opportunity there that we can.
Maybe my daughters have tablets, and I'm turning into one of these parents that really dislikes digital technology.
Right.
I'm not joking. You see that one of them downloaded this game where you had to touch a cookie as many times as you could in a minute, right? And I'm sitting watching them with this iPad here, touching a cookie, and I'm thinking, why did Santa Claus buy you that? And then the other one is Flappy Birds, although they've got me playing it now, and I just, goodness gracious, I'm totally hooked on it. But my other daughter's on Uvu, she's on Instagram, and on Snapchat, and I'm getting all this thing about, you're not old enough, and then I'm thinking, oh goodness, I'm going to need to kind of give in at some point here.
Yeah.
So all that stuff's going on, but I said to my daughter the other day, you've had that since Christmas, have I seen one story? And I looked at myself and I thought, why on earth would she want to write a story?
Yeah. Well, maybe she'll do a story in another way. Maybe she'll.
She might. Aye.
And I mean, again, I was sitting in the train the other day, and I was watching somebody do a word search on an iPad, and I was thinking, there's a £300 sheet of paper, and a colour pencil. Of course, but we should maybe be able to do something about that rather than worrying about teaching, you know, how you hit a menu in Excel or insert a formula. It becomes, you know,
The thing is, though, John, when we were going around visiting schools in Scotland, we were trying to promote this or investigate the developing narrative of these tools and how they're being used. I did see some schools where, again, we were very polite how we said this, but the practice was very kind of substitutional, and it didn't really merit the investment. Or didn't appear to merit the investment that had been, but you could argue they were at a very early stage of the developing narrative of these tools. Yet we saw some other schools where that was being used really, really, really well, and the head teacher had a bit of vision and understanding about what a tool such as these could bring to the table in terms of transforming young people's experiences. There's so many things that are at play here that we can't kind of control at all, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, my main takeaway from that sort of stuff was that it was teachers setting targets, goals, the end point, you know, they're saying, I want you to deliver an explanation of your learning, but then just saying to the pupils, it's up to you how you do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I like that.
and some of them, some of them would end up with a podcast, and some of them would end up with you know, a slideshow. And we had kids who were doing their spelling words in Minecraft, you know, and that sort of thing. And I think, you know, if you do your spelling and you learn your spelling and you've got this thing, however you do it, if you write them with your finger in some sort of art package, or you make a floating word in the sky with Minecraft, as long as you learn your spelling, and as long as, you know, you say to the children that that's your, it's your choice, but the target is that you will, you know, produce some evidence, will show what you know, or will build something collaboratively.
And I think you need teachers who are confident in that approach.
Yeah.
And it comes back to the idea when local authorities gave everybody access to a suite of software and we all use the same software. Well, you think about the BYOD agenda and how that's going to challenge that.
Yeah.
Particularly in relation to things like, I was speaking to the students today about searching, researching and presenting. And I was going about the fact that PowerPoint is one of the, it could be used for great purposes, but it all seems to be the thing that's used mainly in primary schools. Well, go and do a PowerPoint, do a PowerPoint. And so we're talking about making information presentations beautiful. I mean, we're looking at effective uses of use of slides and the effect that, and so we're doing all that stuff. And I was going someplace with that. What were we saying? I completely tripped myself off.
Aye, to allow folk to choose the tool, really, I think.
Yeah, that was where it was. And so where teachers maybe were comfy with PowerPoint, they might need to start thinking about, I'm not going to tell them to use PowerPoint, but they may use Prezi, they might want to use Keynote, they might want to use what's it called? Storehouse. They might want to use Google Slides. But the task is more not about the technology used to deliver it, it's what have you researched and how you convey that information.
Yeah. I'm seeing Graham Pate is just tweeting at us here. He's hit a few tonight, but using technology well for learning is a mix of knowledge, imagination, give it a go attitude, and trust. And I think, I'm presuming he means you've got to trust your learners. And teachers have got to be open to that sort of thing, and to almost say, I don't know how you're going to produce this, you know, presentation or whatever you're giving me, because I don't know 26 different technologies.
Well, my students today were given a task, my ME1s. Next time I see them, they're going to get a bit of time, but they have to present for me a beautiful presentation using a presentation tool of their choice about the backstory for Winston Churchill being deselected from his post as an MP in Dundee. So I'm tying it into kind of social studies, etc., and to look at the fact that he voted against votes for women back then, and the women of Dundee voted against him, and they also voted in a prohibitionist.
Good for them. Saved on the wheelbarrows.
I think I used the wrong term. What was his name? Wasn't prohibition, goodness gracious. Oh, it was Eddie Scrimger. Temperance candidate, that's the man.
Yep.
Complete opposite of what I said.
Yeah, so it would, a temperance candidate would save money in wheelbarrows in Dundee.
It was an Eddie Scrimger was his name. Yeah. And so he replaced Winston Churchill. So I've said to them, look, there's all these tools, but it's about how you convey the information. I've seen too many maybe teachers as well and pupils talking to a bullet point text driven PowerPoint. And we want to try and help them understand that you're actually telling a story. You've got to convey it in a compelling way. And so hopefully we're going to see some good things from the students.
Yep.
That sounds great.
I'm conscious, Derek, that we've run an hour now. There's only another 70 or 80 items on the areas I thought you could cover tonight. I'm going to suggest that we cut that short. I certainly would really be interested later on in talking to you about the maker culture stuff, digital creativity, and I'm hoping maybe you would be interested in coming back another time to talk about that.
Well, I will do, because last week with my BEd3s, we were looking at highly able children, and I introduced them to Mozilla WebMaker tools. And one of them hacked the Tea in the Park website and put cancelled on it, you know, and put it on their Facebook site, and it was like it caused a furore on their Facebook page.
Okay.
But I was kind of giggling in a way, thinking, just imagine what you could start to do if you were teaching people how to get underneath the hood of the web in such a way that allowed them to kind of rewrite it. And just think the fun we could have with that, and my students were totally totally into it and totally lost in it and were coming up with some of the most amazing things. Mm-hmm. So I'd be delighted to talk to you about maker culture as well and about how I think that can play a part in things.
Brilliant, because that's I'm very fond of silly nonsense. I also wanted to go into hot milky drink a wee bit, but again, we can maybe leave that for a second visit, Derek, if that's okay.
Well, gents, I'm happy to come back. I was unable to speak to you when I was a civil servant. We weren't allowed to do things like this, but I'm not there anymore, so I'd be happy to talk and teach you again if you want to be back.
Brilliant, that'd be great, Derek. So we'll just kind of wrap it up there, I think, and say thanks very much to Derek for just fascinating and, I don't know, inspiring evening. Didn't quite get to rabble rousing, but inspiring certainly, and give us lots to chew over and lots to think about. David, are you on tomorrow?
Oh. Yes, I'm on to. I've got a whole host of things lined up now that Mr. Archibald, who's a primary teacher down in the Dumfries and Galloway, is suggesting that Lego Movie is good CPD, so that's be sorted. I'll be one and a half of my 35 hours a year. tomorrow night we've got Claire Bryden, who's a charter teacher and a teacher of English at Oban High School, who's going to be talking about some of the great work that she's been involved in various primary schools in recent years. So that's 7:45 done tomorrow. That's Thursday evening. I've got so many more questions for Derek. Definitely need to come back on.
Line them up. Maybe we'll send you some ahead of time next time, Derek, or I don't know. Well, maybe not. I think this is good fun. We've got another teacher educator on next Wednesday, who's Nick Hood, who's teaching fellow now at the University of Edinburgh.
And John, talking about Dumfries and Galloway,
interestingly enough, guys, Nick Hood did a podcast, I think, that was, and he talked about why use Guitar Hero when you could learn to play the guitar. Mm-hmm. And I remember writing to Nick saying, well, you're kind of missing the point. We're not learning to play the guitar. If you want to learn to play the guitar, go play the guitar. We're using this to create context for learning and get kids switched on to literacy, numeracy, art and design, speaking French, modern form languages. And so, again, having those debates and those discussions about things is really helpful. And it's great that people publish these thoughts and you get to speak about people and say, no, this isn't what I'm trying to do. This is what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was through your hashtag Edgy Talk thing I picked that up on. That was a while back.
Yep, that's right. Nick is always a good one for picking interesting and alternate views to quite a lot of different things. So I'm looking forward to talking to Nick.
So what I was just asking there was, am I right in saying that we're going to be live or recording some stuff from a teach meet in the Dumfries and Galloway area? Is that, I noticed something on Twitter today. Do you know anything about it?
I don't know anything about it. It'd be great if somebody out there, if you are having a teach meet or having an educational thought even, and you want to share it with other people, there's lots of ways to do that through Radio Edge or EduTalk. You could just record an audio boo and tag it EduTalk and it'll be automatically published on the EduTalk site. You can get in touch with us if you want to come and talk on Wednesdays or Thursdays, or if you were interested in broadcasting from a particular event and we could make it, we'd be happy to support you. And I think if we couldn't make it, we'd be happy to support you in at least some vague instructions on how to do so.
And like Derek previously at LTS, we've got a whole heap of technology that we're happy to lend out.
No, this is a new we've got a few bits of kit which would be handy for people to record things, and I say, so we can certainly give folk a bit of instruction on how to do some live broadcasting or anything else. We've got a live stream of audio going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we only use a few hours a week, and we're happy for other people to come in any other time, as long as they're talking about education. I think would be it, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, yep. So, hey guys, well, I've found Derek on BBC News and YouTube, so I'm going to be off to watch that. That piece of classic television.
Yeah, that was two stone ago.
Okay, I think we'll call that a wrap, folks, and I'm just going to stop the broadcast now. So good night. Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Good night,
everybody.